Good evening, Mampu, and good evening, sisters and brothers in the Dharma. I'm glad to be here, Ohio, to share with you the precious teaching of the Buddha. Today, my talk is the way to true happiness. All beings love happiness, seek happiness, and avoid suffering. But unfortunately, most beings perceive, think that happiness comes from external. That happiness comes from external objects, not in work. Because of this wrong perception that beings, we are seeking happiness through the enjoyment of all six external objects. Our eyes constantly seeking for pleasant, agreeable, pleasing, visible objects. So we spend our time watching movies, admiring all the external beautiful visible objects. We think it gives us satisfaction. And our ear constantly seeking sweet sound, pleasing sound, agreeable sound. And our nose constantly seeking for good smell, fragrant smell. And our tongue constantly seeking for delicious taste, sweet taste. And our body constantly seeking for soft touch, the touch that gives us satisfaction, like sexual touch and so on. And our mind indulges in all types of fantasies, our planning, expectations in the future, and so on. So we think by enjoying these six external objects that give us eternal happiness, that give us satisfaction. And the more you think in this way, then your body follow your mind. So your body will seek all types of enjoyment through the six external objects. And there's a danger in this enjoyment of six external objects. This six, the more you enjoy it, the more you get addicted. You get addicted and the more the craving increases. Because the pleasure you have while enjoying all these six external objects, and that dependent on that pleasant feelings, that craving arises. Depend on the craving, then clinging arises. Clinging is intense craving. And the craving increases and become intense craving that you can't let go of this six external objects. And when you cannot, the mind cannot let go of this enjoyment of six external objects, then you perform different types of bodily actions, verbal actions to satiate your craving. And this bodily actions and mental actions we call in the teaching of the Buddha, we call karma. Karma. So karma, we perform either wholesome karma or unwholesome karma. And the law of the karma says, when there's action, there is reaction. Even Albert Einstein said that. So when you throw a ball, onto the wall, the ball rebounds. This is the law of karma, actions and reactions. So while enjoying all these six sense pleasures, we perform different types of unwholesome, mostly unwholesome karma. They leave behind karmic energy. When this karmic energy matures, or when this karmic energy latent in the stream of our mind and body. And when this karmic energy meets with favorable conditions, then the result appears, the fruit arises, appears. Then maybe we have to pay for it. So, because of not understanding enjoyment for these six external objects that leave behind a lot of karmic energy, that once the karmic energy matured, we have to pay for it. Because of not understanding of that, then we keep on thinking, we keep on perceiving that happiness comes from external. And the Buddha said that, let me give an example. Sometimes we have the sores on the limbs, and it causes so much itchiness that we have to stretch. But we also know the more we stretch, the more the wounds, the injury it would be. We also know that. Through our experience, we know that. And yet, we cannot control our mind not to scratch. We know, the more we scratch, the more smelly the taste or the smell, the more the injury it would be. And yet, we cannot control. We continue scratching it. Why? Why? I think you have that experience. Every earth has that experience. But do we ask ourselves why? Because when we are scratching that source or wound, we find certain measure of satisfaction, enjoyment. Although it leaves behind, it makes the worse, the wounds become worse. But we don't care about the effect. We just cannot stand. We just feel the satisfaction and the pleasurable feeling while scratching that sore. This seems like enjoying the sensual pleasure. The moment you enjoy, of course, it gives you a sense of satisfaction, pleasant feelings, but the wounds, the injury is very great, like an ant. The ant likes sweet honey. So there's a bottle of honey. The moment the ant sees the honey, then it approaches the honey. And he goes inside the bottle to taste the honey. Then what's the result? Dying inside the honey. So this is a danger. Danger enjoying the sensual pleasure, and it does not give us lasting happiness. On the other hand, we meet with deadly suffering. By enjoying, when the craving increases, our body and mind become hot, agitated, tormented by the craving. So there's no inner peace. And we end with more suffering, both bodily and mentally. So we must understand enjoyment, enjoy of six sense external objects do not bring us lasting happiness. Then, what's the way to true happiness? Happiness has many levels. Gross happiness, subtle happiness. Let me start with gross happiness first. I think the happiness from the very gross happiness come from sharing what we have with other people. Whatever we have, maybe you know, some money we have, some knowledge we have, some material things we have, we share with other people who are needy. So when you see other people using the things we give to them, they are benefited. When we see they are happy using the things we share with them, we also become happy. So this is called dana in the teaching of the Buddha, charity. I think most people do this charity. So by seeing other people happy, we also become happy. This is one type of very gross happiness. And by sharing what we have with other people, we give away some of our material things to other people. We also find another type of happiness. That type of happiness comes from non-attachment to our own property. That non-attachment to our own property gives us another type of happiness. We know, no? Finally, we have to leave the world. We have to pass away. When we pass away, we do not bring even 1 cent with us. We do not bring all, even 1 cent of our property. Not to say that big house, big car, the money, the bank, all the, from the bank. No, receive from the bank. No, we can't bring even 1 cent. What we can bring when we pass away? What do you think? What can we bring when we pass away? What? Karma, yes. Two types of karma. Wholesome karma and unwholesome karma. So if we bring more wholesome karma, that's good for us. If we bring the unwholesome karma more than wholesome karma, that's not good for us. So we know finally we have to die. We have to leave behind all our property, all our beloved ones. Then why not? We cultivate the non-attachment to our property first by sharing what we have with other people. We practice it now first. We cultivate this charity, this generosity now when we are alive. So that then we have two types of happiness in this present time. The first, people benefited from our sharing, they become happy, then we also become happy. And the second happiness, the happiness comes from non-attachment to our own property. So this is the gross type of happiness. The second type of happiness comes from not harming other people. Not harming other people. People harm another person through physical and verbal. So through physical, we harm another person by way of beating them, killing them. Some even we kill animals for a pace. And the verbal, or we take, let's say, we take intoxicants, drugs, to make our mind drunk, to make the mind drunk, the mind lose the clarity. Taking intoxicants or taking alcohol itself is not unwholesome. But when a person without limit taking that alcohol and make the mind drunk, then he loses the clarity of the mind. The mind is out of control. At the time he can do everything which he's not aware. I have many devotees. They often told me that when my husband does not take any alcohol, he is completely fine, good person. The moment he gets drunk, he started to beat me, scolded me, beat my son and daughter. He become a mad man. So avoid taking intoxicants. Because once you take intoxication, you lose the normality of your mind. Then you perform all the bad things. You create suffering for other people. So this tree, I'm not harming other people by abstaining from stealing, abstaining from another one is stealing, not taking things which are not given by other people. And the third one, abstaining from taking intoxicants so that we can keep the clarity of our mind. And this is true, not harming people physically, and not harming people by word also, by our mouth, verbally. So we do not utter half speech to hurt other people. And also we do not tell lies to cheat other people. And we also do not speak slandering or backbiting words to create disharmony between two parties. So this is called not harming other people through body and through our mouth of a verbally action. And by self-restraint or by keeping this morality, this keeping morality must be based on two factors. Number one, through compassion for the other party. Number two, through understanding the law of karma. How through compassion? For example, we at night we walk on a street, and suddenly a thief or a robber approach us using a knife, want to cut our throat. What we feel? How do you feel? How do you feel? Scared, fear, fear of what? Being harmed, being killed. Why we fear of being killed? Because we love life. We love our life. So also, we don't want to be killed because we love our life. Other people, all sentient beings, including animals, they also love their life. They also don't want to be killed because they love their life. So out of compassion for other people, we abstain from unwholesome bodily conduct and verbal conduct out of compassion for other people. This one reason when we, when we keep the morality, we must have this mind, this thought in mind, out of compassion for other people. Because we ourselves don't want to be mistreated by other people. Other people think, all beings have the same feeling. And the third one, dependent on the law of karma. Your understanding, by keeping this morality, not to harm other people, should be based on the understanding of the law of karma. The law of karma says that good begets good, bad begets bad. When we harm other people, one day this karma will return to us. For example, when we kill other people beings, when we kill other beings, there's a volition. Volition want to kill. So when we kill other people, when we kill other people or kill any animals, so we have the volition to make their life short. Their life become short because of our killing. So as a result, there's an action and reaction. So as a result, when this karma ripens, our life becomes short. Our life becomes short. So in this world you can see, some people have long life, some people have very short life. They pass, they die at the age of 20, they die at the age of 15, or they die at the age of 3, And so many young people die in accidents, earthquake, you know, natural disasters. They die very early. Why? Why? Everything happens depend on cause and effect. Things cannot happen like that without reason. So those people who die very early because of the karma of killing. So by understanding the law of karma, we abstain from killing because we love ourselves. We love ourselves. We want to live long in this world. We don't want to become short by. And also by not harming other people, we are protected. We are protected by law of karma. And the Buddha said one day the Buddha said, the king, the minister, when they go out of the palace, they are protected. They are guarded by many bodyguards, army. But the Buddha says, this is not the real protection. Why? Because this protection is external, not internal. But if we observe, if we do not harm other people by body action, by bodily actions or by verbal actions, we are protected internally, although we don't have all these bodyguards to protect us. We are protected internally. That is much more important than protected externally by all the bodyguards, by all the armies. So when we are protected by the law of karma, wherever we go, we become fearless. Fearless. This is very important, especially in the USA, because so many Americans talk to me, you know. They have so much fear. You know, how to overcome the fear? We have so much fear. I just can't understand what they are afraid of. I don't understand. I don't know what you're afraid of. I said, I don't know. I just have so much worry. Worry my house being robbed. Worry I will be killed. So many worries. But if you keep your morality pure, you will never harm other people. Automatically, you will become fearless. Just like me. I always walk on the street. People say, be careful. I say, I don't know what to be careful of. You know? Wherever I go, I feel that I'm fearless. Because I do not harm other people. I think other people also will not harm me. Even they harm me, I think it's my past karma. You know, I care for my dog. That's all. So this fearlessness is a type of happiness. No. So you ask yourself, what are you fear of? Yeah? If you never harm other people, you shouldn't fear of anything. But if you have harmed other people previously, but now you come to understanding the law of karma, the law of actions and reactions, then you start restraint. You practice self-restraint, not to harm other people anymore. And whatever has passed, let them pass away. Pass already. Don't reflect or don't remorse whatever passed. Unwholesome actions, bodily actions, and verbal actions. Don't remorse over that. They already passed. But from now onwards, if you want to get internal protection and you want to live without fear, then we practice self-restraint. And that gives you a lot of confidence in life. Even while facing any dangers, while facing the death, you are not afraid of anything. Because you know you are going to be reborn in a happy realm of existence. You are not going to hell you are not going to become animals. You are certain you will go to the good existence in the next resource. Then your life full of happiness. Okay, so this is the second type of happiness. Happiness comes from not harming anyone through verbal action and through physical action. Okay. Now we come to another third type of happiness. The third type of happiness comes from not harming other people, even mentally. Sometimes we wish our enemy to be harmed. We wish our beloved one to live happily, but we wish our enemies to be harmed. That we harm other people mentally. The moment this type of thought arrives in our mind starts to lose the peace of the mind. No more peace, because you're mentally mentally wish other people to be harmed. Then you also lose the happiness you have, the peacefulness you have. So even mentally, we shouldn't wish other people to be harmed. How can we achieve that? By cultivating loving kindness. We call metta bhavana. By cultivating loving kindness. But to start cultivate loving kindness to our enemy is not an easy task. If you start with enemy, may my enemy be well and happy, may he be free from suffering, then we end up our meditation wanting to give him a blow. Why? Because we have no master of our mind yet. So we shouldn't start with sending loving kindness to our enemies. This is not practical for the beginner. So for beginning, we start sending the metta to ourselves first. But this is very easy for Asian people and very difficult for Americans. Again, I just don't know why. So having talked to so many people, they start to tell me, because we have a lot of self-hatred. many Americans told me, they have a lot of self-hatred. I don't know where the self-hatred comes from. So then I changed another technique. Okay, since you cannot have loving kindness to yourself, why not you start with your pet? You start with your pets first. Because all the Westerners like pets. And I just don't understand why they love pets more than human beings. So when I come to America, there's so many things I do not understand. So one day I asked one of the lecturers, he has cats, he has dogs. I said, why you like the pet so much? Then she answered me, when I get angry with him, at least he never argue me back. Never quarrel back. I think this is the reason they love pets. So I said, okay, let me start with a pet. And they said that it's very easy to send loving kindness to the pet, rather to a person. Okay, this is a skillful means. Okay, you can start with your pet. And if successful, then you start with yourself. Send a loving kindness to myself. Everybody like to be happy. I also like to be happy. May I be well and happy, free from all mental suffering, free from all physical suffering. Until you feel your mind is peaceful, become a little bit happy. But you should visualize your own happy time, the happy time you have during your life, your achievement, your happy time, and your own smiling face. And somebody told me, my own smiling face never appears. It's so difficult to radiate loving kindness to oneself. Anyway, we try again and again until we are successful. Then we try to rebuke loving kindness to our respected teachers or friends. Respected teachers and friends, not to send to our parents first. Because if we send loving kindness to our parents, if we, our parents have some sickness, you know, disease that, you know, we may keep on thinking of her or his disease that makes us feel sorrowful. So we avoid sending loving kindness to our parents first until we master our mind. Then we can send to anyone. Okay. Then after that, we start to send loving kindness to a neutral person. If you're successful in sending loving kindness to a respected teacher, then we move to another object, we change another object. We send loving kindness to a neutral person. A person you do not hate and you do not like. Anyone among us, now you meet with her, just today you do not hate him and you do not like him. Then you visualize his or her face, then may he be well and happy, may she be well and happy. Until you feel that you also become happy. Then you are successful. You are successful in radiating loving kindness to the neutral person. Then after that, you start the enemy. You start the enemy. But don't immediately choose the enemy you hate most. If you choose the enemy you hate most, that you end up in anger. So you should choose an enemy you hate little bit only. You hate little bit in the beginning, you know. And if you are successful, then you change another. You hate more than little bit. Then if you are successful, until you choose the enemy you hate most. And if you have no enemy at all in this world, it's a blessing. You don't have to do to send your loving kindness to enemy. But although we don't have hate, we don't have any hatred to anyone, but somebody may hate us. You know, someone may do not like us. So those who do not like us should be considered as enemy. So we can also send the love to those who do not like us, although to us we don't have any hatred towards them. Until when you send the enemy, the loving kindness to them, until one day when you saw him, he started to smile to you, to greet you, even to send a gift to you, then you feel that abundant happiness. You have solved the hatred. You have dissolved his hate to you. And don't think it's miracle, it works very well. I would like to tell you my own experience. When I was in Malaysia, I stayed with one lady. Now this lady is very disrespectful to two of us. We are two nuns. I stay with one lady. She's very disrespectful verbally and physically. Very gross behavior. And the way she talks, like, you know, like quarreling with us, you know. Then I think, no, I should do something to change the situation. So I started sending loving kindness to her. I keep her smiling face in front of me. Then may she be well and happy. May she be free from mental suffering. After half an hour, then I went back to my room. Before I opened my room, my another fellow nun told me that, "Hey, sister, he prepared two gifts to offer to us." Wow, my God. From that day onward, I started to realize how powerful is loving kindness meditation. Before that, I never tried. and I do not know how powerful is it. Only this incident made me realize how powerful is loving kindness meditation. So this loving talk, loving kindness, this talk itself has great power. You must have faith in it. Before I try, I never know. After trying, I have unshakable faith in loving kindness. This is one incident. Another my experience is the Kuti, the cottage I stay in Malaysia, has many ants, black ants, very tiny black ants. So one day, at the midnight, I woke up at the midnight because the ant, the black ant, crawling all over my body, and it bite me so painful. Immediately, it bite, the skin became inflamed, and it's so tiny. I want to, because as a nun, we restrain from killing even the tiny ant. So I try to pick it up. The more I pick, the more it stick. So I have no way. Then, okay, I said, why not I try loving kindness? So I sit there, start sending loving kindness to all this beloved end. May all this end be free from suffering. May they be well and happy. May they be well and happy. Only after few minutes, the ant stopped biting me. Stopped biting me at all. No? But there are two, I think one or two still bite me. They not yet receive my loving kindness, I think. They are slow learner. slow receiver. Only one or two. Among, you know, 100, only one or two still bite me. But because my mind keep on with this loving kindness, which is wholesome talk, so I cannot feel the pain. Because my mind is engaged in a wholesomeness, in a wholesome thought of wishing this ends well and happy. So although one or two still bite me, I do not feel the pain at all. Oh, wonderful, it works so wonderfully. And then after that, the ends still living in my cottage, in my kuti, but never bite me anymore. The claw on my table, when I left my kuti, when I went traveling, they also left. When I came back, they come again. But never bite me anymore. They only crawling here and there, never crawl on my body. Oh, wonderful, this loving kindness. You should try, you know, if you have a lot of enemies, you should try this one. No, if many people don't like you, you should try this one. It improves your personal relationship. And if you hate your boss, you should try this even more. if you are the boss, you know, then all your staff never listen to you, you should try this loving kindness even more. It works so well, you know. And also, I try to send loving kindness to my enemy. But I do not mix with them. I do not hate them, but they keep on abusing me. In this world, you know, even you are the Buddha, you cannot avoid people harass you, abuse you, you know. This is called, the eight conditions of the world. Loka Dhamma, the eight winds, the four poles. What? Suffering and happiness, fame and defame, gain and loss, praise and blame. As long as you are living in this world, you cannot escape from this eight worldly conditions. Even Buddha also cannot avoid meeting with this eight worldly conditions. So, me too. So many people, you know, sometimes people abuse me, you know, harass me. Then I will sit, if I'm not mindful, you know, the moment I listen, all this unpleasant sound come to contact with my ear. If I'm not mindful, I feel irritated. But the moment the mindfulness come back to me, I sit and I radiate loving kindness to them. So when I radiate loving kindness, very quick, 5 to 10 minutes only, my mind full of happiness. Very happy, a lot of happiness arrives in my mind. And at that time, I start to think, you know, the person who utter abusive words, try to hurt me. Actually, he is in love. In order to utter abusive words to hurt somebody, you must have anger first. Am I right? Without anger, you can't utter half speech or you can't abuse somebody. So when this person utter half speech to abuse me, he is full of anger. And now I receive that abusive word and I sit and radiate or send the loving kindness to him. I'm full of happiness here. I'm so happy, because loving kindness gives you happiness. So I'm happy now. May you be well and happy. May you be well and happy. So, although I, apparently, like I am in love because I'm abused by other people, but actually, he is in love. I am a person who enjoys happiness. He is a person who suffers from his anger. So if you can see things in this way, and if you can radiate the loving kindness to your enemy and gain a lot of happiness, none can harm you anymore. If you can gain happiness by radiating loving kindness even to enemy, then in this world none can harm you. If none can harm you, it's a great happiness, a great blessing you have. You become even more fearless. And wherever you go, people love you because you keep on sending loving kindness to all people. So wherever you go, people love you. You don't feel lonely anymore. So this is another type of happiness. The third type of happiness. Okay, now we come to the subtlest, the most subtle type of happiness and the most difficult to do. Loving kindness is considered easy to do. The last happiness, the subtle happiness and the true happiness is non-attachment to your body and mind. How? We come in this world with a lot of attachment. First, we attach to our body. Everybody attached to their body. Because of the attachment to the body, when body feels sick, we feel depressed. When there's sickening, sickness or any disease occurs in the body, we feel so depressed. We become so unhappy. And that unhappiness and that depression make your health even worse. Am I right? So why we feel unhappy when the body feels sick, when the body falls sick? Why? Have you ever investigated why? When your body feels sick, do you feel depressed? Why? What's the reason? What's the cause? Right, because of the attachment. So the cause lies on attachment to the body. If you do not attach to your body, like Arahant, no attachment to the body. So whatever happened to his body, he didn't feel sick. He feel the pain physically, but he didn't feel the pain mentally. We feel the pain when body feels sick. We feel the pain physically as well as mentally because we attach to our body. So we must learn the happiness. We must learn how to gain happiness from non-attachment, from detachment to our body. How? The body is made up by four elements. We all know. Body is concept. If you can penetrate, if you can practice four elements meditation, the four elements, earth element, water element, fire element and wind element. What is earth element? Earth element has characteristics of hardness. For example, you touch your bone, you touch your hand, you feel the hardness. You touch your head, all hardness. You touch all over the body, you feel the hardness, all softness. Huh? You touch a little bit hard, you feel hardness. You touch softly, you feel softness. So this softness, hardness, roughness are the characteristics of earth element. Huh? Earth element is not the earth itself. It's the characteristic that it carries. What is the characteristic? Hardness, roughness, softness. Okay. Then water element. What's characteristic of water element? When your tear flows, saliva flows, blood flows. So water element has flowing as characteristic. Then fire element. What's the characteristic of fire element? Heat. Everybody know. Heat. Cold as well. Cold and heat is relatively. When it's not so cold, when it's very hot, it's hot. When it's less hot, it becomes cold. So relatively, it's called fire element. Then wind element. Our body can sit erect, straight. Why? Because of the supporting force. That supporting force is called wind element. And we can move, flex our limb, our hand, flex, stretch. Why? Because of wind element. So anything that moves, that has movement, that's called wind element. So this body, if you investigate this body, this wisdom, from top of the head down to the soul, again and again, you only find these four elements. Earth element, water, fire, and wind. And if you keep on, discerning the four elements from top of the head down to the soul again and again, and these four elements will break down into billions of particles, very tiny particles. Particles in the body, you can see all these billions of particles arising and passing away, arising and passing away constantly. So at the time you understand, this body is keep on arising and passing away. What is arising and passing away? Can it give you happiness or not? What is arising and passing away is not permanent. It's impermanent. So what is impermanent, keep on changing, keep on arising and passing away, can it give you happiness? Cannot. You cannot control. Arising, stop, don't pass away. You can't. You follow its nature. Arising and passing away. So if we cling, if we attach to this body, body is only conventional truth. Ultimate truth is only arising and passing away. If we attach to something which is impermanent, which is keep on passing away, then we are attached to suffering. So understand the body is keep on arising and passing away, then we start to let go our attachment. Why? Because we understand we cannot hold on to it. It keep on arising and passing away. If we cannot hold on to it, then naturally we have to let go of it. So when we let go of it, then we become now detached to our body. So when we become detached to our body, when the body changes, fall sick, get old, the hair turn to white, turn to grey, we do not feel the depression. We do not feel the pain mentally. And whatever happened to our body, if we do not feel the pain, then there's another type of happiness, good happiness. Whatever comes, let it come. So this also another type of happiness by non-attachment to the body. Okay, now we come to non-attachment to the mind. Mind, there are four. We can this mind we can divide it into four aggregates. Number one is feeling aggregates. Feeling also included in the mind. Number two is perception aggregate. Number three, formation aggregate. Formation aggregate, all our emotions, anger, lust, jealousy, cruelty, all the emotions, depression, fears, and so on. And the last one is consciousness aggregate. Let us start with perception aggregate. How not to cling to perception aggregate? When we were born, we start to, okay, before that, what is the perception? What is the meaning of perception? Sanya. Perception has the meaning, has the characteristic of perceive the quality of the object so that it can recognize it again. For example, when you first see the bird, so the perception perceives the bird has two wings, flying in the sky. And the second time, when you, because the perception make the mark, make a note, bird is like that. And the second time when you encounter the bird again, this perception arises. Recognize this is bird, which we have previously perceived and keep in the memory, and this bird. So perception has two functions. One is to perceive the specific characteristic of the object, and second to recognize it again. So when we were born, we perceive everything. When we were born, we start crying for food, So when the milk, mother's milk, come to contact with our tongue, very unpleasant, very pleasant feeling arises, and we perceive this very good. We start to perceive, oh, this food is very pleasant, very good. And this good, we also perceive, this good feeling is permanent. That's why until now we still crave for food. Because when we were born, we start to perceive food are good, food are permanent. The pleasant feeling we have from the food is permanent. It gives happiness. Once, and also the eye, when the eye first, when we were born, the eye, when first see something, we perceive, oh, very good, wonderful, because 10 months in the mother's womb, all dark, cannot see anything. Now the eye often start to see the visible object, oh, very good, very pleasant, wonderful. Everything the eye see are pleasant, permanent, are beautiful. And we perceive all are pleasant, beautiful, permanent, and we keep in the memory. So next time, whenever we see again, it's still good, still permanent, still pleasant. Because once you perceive wrongly, it becomes very deep rooted in our mental stream. So when we were born, we perceive everything, whatever our eyes see, our ear hears, our nose smells, our taste, our tongue taste, our body touch, and our mental think. We all perceive them as permanent, pleasant, beautiful, and there is a self perceive them. This I, the permanent self, permanent I perceive them. And this is called Sanya Vipalasa, perverted perception. And if we perceive it as a pleasant, let's say we perceive the pleasant feeling, we perceive the pleasant feeling we have with our child, with our son, it's very pleasant, it's permanent. Now let's say our son meets with accident and dies, pass away. Previously you have perceived living with the sun is so pleasant, so the pleasant feeling is so good, so permanent. Now the sun passed away. Because previously you perceived it as permanent as happiness. Now come out opposite. So you cannot bear. You cannot bear that unpleasant feeling. You cannot bear that suffering. Because previously you always perceive it pleasant, it's permanent. But things happen impermanent. Things happen not according to your will, not according to your wish. So you suffer. You start feel suffering. because previously you perceive wrongly. You do not perceive things as they really are. What are the things as they really are? All formations, everything in this world is subject to change. Now, everything in this world is keep on arising, passing away. They are not permanent. Everything arising, passing away, arising and passing away. Then when you see everything arising and passing away, you feel the oppression, being oppressed by constantly arising and passing away. This suffering, this unsatisfactory, unsatisfactory in things changing. So once you perceive wrongly, then when the thing changes, then you feel the suffering. So the first we have to let go is our wrong perception. If we can let go our wrong perception, then whatever happens, you are not moved. You become unshakable. Okay. And the second one, feeling. Where the feeling comes? Feeling comes from the sixth contact. First, feeling comes from eye contact. When the eye meet with pleasant, agreeable, visible form, very pleasant feeling arises. And when the feeling, pleasant feeling arises, we start to crave for the pleasant feeling. We want it. We want them more and more. So dependent on pleasant feeling, craving arises. And also the ear, when somebody praise us, oh, so much pleasant feeling arises. And because of that pleasant feeling, even in the dream we smile. And we want the praise some more. When you meet with that person, you hope he can praise you even more. This present feeling, whenever this present feeling, the mind starts to crave, to grasp. This is the nature of the mind. Nature of the mind. That's why Buddha says independent origination, dependent on feelings, craving arises. And so also, nose, when any nose and tongue, any pleasant or good taste, touch your tongue, present feeling arises. Then we want, for example, the chocolate. The chocolate chip touch your tongue sensitivity. Oh, wow, very pleasant feeling. Because of that pleasant feeling, you stretch your hand. One more piece. One more piece. This is what stretching your hand to get one more piece is craving. A sign of craving. And also the bodily. Bodily crave for soft touch. And so on, mentally crave for all the fantasy, all the good thoughts. Okay, now let us examine the feeling. You can think of when you were born. When you were born until now, you have experienced billion types of pleasant feelings. Am I right? Okay, now you think. All this pleasant feeling you have experienced before, are they still there or they have passed away? Passed away or are they still there?
Passed away.
Passed away already. Passed away. So this shows that all feelings are impermanent. All feelings are impermanent. Already passed away. But when we encounter present feeling, the time, we always forget it. We always forget this pleasant feeling will pass away, But when we encounter the unpleasant feeling, we hope so much this unpleasant feeling quickly go away. We hope quickly go away. Don't laugh. But when we encounter pleasant feeling, no, we do want them to pass away. So we are not seeing things as they really are. We only want things appear the way we want. We want the pleasant feeling last forever. Our pleasant feeling with the sixth sense contact. We want them to last forever. But unpleasant feelings, we hope cease immediately. So we are not doing things as they really are. But whether we hope it pass away or it lasts, they never listen to us. The feeling never listen to us. It happens, it arises and pass away according to cause and condition. When the cause for its cessation, for its ceasing, is there, then it passes away. So it depends on cause and condition. And if we do not understand cause and condition, and we just want things happen according to our will, and one thing happen the way we want, then we are bound to meet with suffering. So how can we get rid of all this suffering? Mindfulness, how to get rid of all this suffering? There are two factors. One is mindfulness, second is wisdom. Okay, what is mindfulness? Sati. Mindfulness, there are two factors in mindfulness. One is recognizing, for example, the anger has arisen in your mind. You recognize, there is anger arisen in my mind. You recognize it. And the second, you accept it. Acceptance. Accept things as they really are. Don't try to push it away. For example, unpleasant feeling. Oh, I don't want to push it away. Not pleasant feeling, I want a clean. No. Accept them as they really are. No unpleasant feeling has arisen in me. First recognizing, second accept it. Don't try to push away, neither cling to them. These two constitute mindfulness. Okay. Then we go to wisdom. Wisdom first. Disidentify. Wisdom means see things as they really are. Okay. So wisdom first. Disidentify this unpleasant feeling. Unpleasant feeling is not I, not my, not myself. You disidentify it first. If you do not identify, what will happen? What will happen? Then you identify. You identify, you think feeling as I. I am feeling. I equal to feeling. Feeling as I. Then you start to identify. The moment you identify pleasant, unpleasant feeling as I, you suffer. The moment you identify pleasant feeling of pleasant feeling as I, you also suffer from the craving. One you suffer from your anger, the other one you suffer from your craving. The moment you identify feeling as I. So to get it from this feeling, you first disidentify them first. Then later on, you investigate. Feeling is not I, not my, not myself. What is this feeling? What is this? You investigate. Sama vichara, sambo sangha. Investigation is very important in the teaching of the Buddha. Investigation. Wisdom. So you investigate. What is this feeling? Where it comes from? Where this pleasant feeling comes from? If you can investigate in this way, then you will find the answer. It must come from the contact. Either eye contact, ear contact, nose contact, tongue contact, body contact, or mind contact. It must come from either one of these six contacts. Then you see, if because of the contact, feeling arises, whether pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, or neither unpleasant nor pleasant feeling. So you understand, a feeling is an effect. It's an effect of the cause. Feeling is an effect of the cause. That's why it's not I. That's why Buddha says feeling is not I, not mine, not myself. It's just an effect of a cause. And as the cause keep on changing, because the contact keep on changing, your contact keep on changing, then the effect also keep on changing. Effect keep on changing. Then you understand the effect of this feeling is keep on changing. That's why it is impermanent. It is impermanent. So mentally, you should mark it as impermanent, impermanent, impermanent. So whatever feeling arises in you, mentally you mark it as impermanent, 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 impermanent. Why should we mark like that? Why should we mentally not impermanent? So not to cling to the feelings. If you do not mark as impermanent, then pleasant feeling, sure you cling to them. You want the pleasant feeling last for long. But it won't listen to you. Pleasant feeling won't listen to you. Because it depends on the causes, not depend on your will. So if you mark impermanent, 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 then your consciousness will not cling to this pleasant feeling. And when your consciousness does not cling to this pleasant feeling, and when this pleasant feeling actually passes away, you will not feel the suffering. You will not feel the suffering because you already know, you already mark, you already mentally note, mark it as impermanent. So when you really pass away, you remain equanimous. If you can remain equanimous, this is highest happiness. This great happiness. So, now let me repeat. So, first, if you want to free, you want to gain the true happiness, want to get yourself, get it of all types of suffering through your mind and body, then you've got to apply two factors, two mental factors. One is mindfulness, second is wisdom. Mindfulness, first recognize what's happening in you, second accept. Don't cling, neither cling nor push it away. The third wisdom, first misidentify them. Either your anger, your feeling, your emotion, your fear, your depression, your thinking, covetousness, every mental phenomena. Disidentify them. They are not mine, not myself. Then if they are not mine, not myself, what are they? Investigate. Let me add some more information. Let's say feeling. What is the characteristic of feeling? All mental states, feeling, perception, volition, mindfulness, greed, delusion, anger, all mental states have their own characteristics, have their own functions to perform. For example, feeling. What is the characteristic of feeling? Feeling has the characteristic of experiencing the desirable or undesirable aspect of the object. For example, chocolate cake. Chocolate cake has the desirable aspect. Has the delicious aspect of the object. And when the chocolate cake touch your tongue, then pleasant feeling arises, experiencing the desirable aspect of that chocolate cake. This is pleasant feeling's characteristic. So it's not I feel the pleasant taste. It's the feeling itself. The mental state of feeling is just experiencing the delicious taste of the chocolate. So you disidentify feeling, not I, not mine, not myself. Then you investigate what is feeling. So you understand the characteristic of feeling is just a mental phenomena performing its function. Then you also ask yourself, investigate yourself, where it comes from. It comes from tongue contact, the chocolate. Impinges the tongue sensitivity, just like feeling arises. Before that, no pleasant feeling. Before chocolate cake touch my tongue, there's no pleasant feeling. Only the moment of the impingement, then pleasant feeling arises. So you understand, feeling is just a cause. It's just an effect of the cause. So it's merely cause and effect. Then later on, in order not to cling to this pleasant feeling, we contemplate this pleasant feeling as impermanent, changing. Then finally, you make up your decision, let go of that pleasant feeling. Sometimes you may mentally impermanent, but the subconsciousness still want it to stay. Mentally just no impermanent, but subconscious no, stay more. No. So mentally you must ready to let go of them. Push yourself, letting go. Mentally say, letting go. If you can do the way I share with you, then gradually you will find your happiness increases day by day. If you can practice in this way, your happiness increases day by day. Because you can let go, you have no attachment to whatever arising in your mind and body. Buddha said, what is the noble truth of suffering? Five aggregates of clinging are the noble truth of suffering. What are the five aggregates? Materiality aggregate, body. Body is materiality aggregate. And feeling aggregate, perception aggregate, formation aggregate, and consciousness aggregate. These four mental aggregate is mind, belong to mind. Materiality aggregate belong to body. So this mind and body are the subject. This mind and body subject to our clinging. It's the noble truth of suffering. The five aggregates of clinging. So we cling to these five aggregates by two ways. First, by craving. Second, by wrong view. We identify these five aggregates as I, mine, myself. And because of wrong identification, we cling to them. And Buddha says, what are the cause for our clinging? What is the origin of the number two of suffering? Craving. Craving for this five aggregates become the origin of the truth of suffering. So in order to free ourselves from suffering, we have to let go of our craving. We have to let go the origin of the suffering, which is craving. So the moment you contemplate impermanence, non-self, and the mind, let go of them, then you are free from suffering. And if you can practice this one moment to moment, you don't have to go to the intensive retreat in order to achieve this. Every moment, because we have the feeling all the time, whether pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, we have feeling all the time. Why? Because our six senses door are open all the time. So the contact from the external is occurring all the time. So we have so many types of feeling occurring all the time. Then if you can pay attention to these feelings with mindfulness and wisdom, then at that moment you can free yourself from all types of suffering. And there is the final happiness. At the final stage, when you see all this, when your mindfulness and wisdom become sharper and sharper, then whatever arising in your mind and body, you just see it arising, passing away. Then you start to understand, I cannot cling to them anymore. Then the mind automatically let go of them. When the mind let go of them, that is called freedom of the heart. The mind no more cling to anything, no clinging whatsoever. So your mind gets the freedom of the heart, and that is called liberation. Liberation from moment to moment. And this liberation is the true happiness that we can cultivate in our daily life. Okay, it's 30. I should stop my talk now. I just have an hour for you to ask questions. Yes?
So practice of mindfulness when
I think you have to cultivate loving kindness as well. When you when you have this mindfulness and wisdom, you know, every time, every moment, from moment to moment, you can get it from the suffering. You can get it, the suffering, by wisdom, by mindfulness and wisdom. You also will develop compassion and loving kindness to other people. Why? Because you understand you have the way to escape from suffering, but other people, they still don't know the way to escape from suffering. So you develop compassion for them. You want to share what you know to other people. This compassion. But loving kindness, I think you still have to cultivate by doing loving kindness meditation. You want to what?
You want to give.
Yes, but if you can cultivate loving kindness, your loving kindness becomes even stronger. So it's a good result from by the method I share with you. But I think to strengthen your loving kindness, you still need to practice loving kindness. It's very easy. Whoever you meet, you say, may you be well and happy, may you... It's very easy. It's not difficult. you make it a habitual practice, Now when you're walking on the street, all the people on the street, you just wish them well and happy. Rather than let your mind wander here and there, thinking of the share market going down. Okay, any other questions?
First of all, thank you very much for giving the Dharma talk. Very good.
Thank you.
So, how do you work meditation into your daily practice? I practice Vipassana insight meditation as well. And I use the noting.
You use mental noting.
Yeah. And I guess my second question is, do you use that for happiness, like when a pleasant feeling arises, or happiness is present in me? Do you note that happiness?
This only mental note, not enough. It's just mental note as happiness. So, if you note happiness as happiness, then our subconsciousness may start to attach to this happiness. Then it doesn't work. It increases our attachment to the happiness, So that's why I share with you, when happiness arises in your mind, you know that happiness arises in the mind. This is called mindfulness. But second, apply wisdom. This happiness is also impermanent. So that you will not attach to it. If you attach to the happiness, when the happiness passes away, you suffer. Being suffer because of the attachment. So we have to not impermanent. Okay. There's one famous teacher in Burma. He teaches this way, very easy, simple way. Whatever arises in your mind and body, just note impermanent. Just one word, impermanent, that's all. Today I give you more information. I give you, you recognize, you accept, then you identify, then you investigate, then you note impermanent, then finally you let go. More systematic way to follow. Okay, any other questions? The loving kindness meditation, what you say?
Yeah. What's the best way to work that into your practice? If you do two sittings a day, if you do metta at one sitting, and then you're regularly just following the breath in another sitting, or is it better to do metta for an entire month, both sittings?
No, I think mixed is good. For example, 1 hour you can do 20 minutes or half an hour loving kindness metta, then another half an hour vipassana. Or sometimes half an hour metta followed by anapana. Then evening you can do. I will encourage you to start with the metta or anapana first. Then you move to vipassana. And this vipassana, where I share with you, that you can practice in your daily life as well. Because during meditation, mind is so quiet, no emotional. Very few emotional for you to contemplate. But in our daily life, in our work, in our career, meeting with people, so many emotions. Anger, irritation, or any time when the sixth sense door come to contact with external six exciting objects. This is the time you should practice. This is the time start mindfulness, start wisdom already. Then if you can practice when a sixth sense door come to contact with exciting sixth sense object, if you can practice this one moment to moment within very short time, you will see that your life start to change. You become much more happier, you become more contented, you become more delightful person. And you are not attached to your happiness as well. This is called freedom of the heart. Okay. Any other questions? Oh, it's very, very different, huh? Usually when I ask American audience any questions, so many people raise up their hands. Yes.
This is all new to me.
Oh.
I have not meditated for many years, if I haven't done it recently.
Okay.
What is the best way to start? I mean, I love this whole concept. I want to learn more, but I'm kind of, how do I start?
You want to start in your daily life, or you want to start in a retreat? Which one you want to start? You want to start first?
I'm not sure.
Okay. So the way I teach here can be practiced in your daily life. So you must start with mindfulness first. Mindfulness first. If you, I will encourage you to. Can you come for my retreat tomorrow?
Maybe. If
you can come, then I can teach more systematically.
Okay.
You know, because I want to teach the concentration first.
Okay.
If our mind is so restless, we cannot, you know, we don't even aware what's arising in, you know, what's arising in the mind, because mind is very fast. You know, so the moment you know, it already passed away. So without concentration, it's a bit difficult to be aware of what is arising in the mind. Sometimes we get angry, only 5 minutes we realize we are so angry, you know. So in order to train your mind to be more sharp, we need some concentration. And this concentration can be achieved through mindful of your breath. You know, it's very easy if you can come for my retreat, just 1 day or 2 days only, I can teach you the basic one. Then without a teacher, you can meditate at home. Then you can meditate at home, then in your daily life, in my retreat also, I will teach you how to contemplate what I have taught today in more details. Okay. Any other questions? No question.
By the way, we'll have a retreat, a 2-day retreat at our center, led by Sister Sophila, starting tomorrow. So if you have time, please find us, feel free to come. Our center can accommodate at least 20 some people, 20 between 25. Starting in the start time in the morning is what?
8 o'clock.
Okay. And it ends in the afternoon, what time?
No.
So the retreat starts.
It is.
Is of
end one.
Before
the
Dhamma talk, what time?
No, I'm
going to
the
sitting
meditation.
I think you better read the schedule for them. Okay.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. 8:30, 9:30 is registration, and briefing of Dhamma talk.
Instruction. Instruction of the practice, how to practice.
Yeah, and then 9:30 to 10:15 a.m. Oh, and then meditation from 10:15 to 11:15. Then walking meditation for 45 minutes. 9:15 to noon, and then lunch from noon to 2 p.m. And then meditation from 2 to 3, walking meditation from 3 to 3:45, meditation 3:45 to 4:45, then walking meditation, then exercise 4:45 to 5:30, dinner time is 5:30 to 7, and then another talk from 7.
The schedule is also on the flyer on the door, the entrance door.
One more question.
Yes, yes. No problem.
Can you speak to the walking meditation, you know, through your teaching, like with the noting, and that'd be like a 3-part or 6-part walking? Just a little bit about it.
Walking meditation, it depends on samatha or vipassana, which one you emphasize. If you want to follow the anapana, you know, you walk without paying attention to the movement of the feet. Just concentrate here. Now walk slowly but without paying attention on the movement of the feet. But if you want to practice like four elements meditation, which is also considered part of the vipassana, you know, like listing, then list, you feel the element. You see which element is more prominent to your mind. For example, listing, you feel the heaviness, then you mentally mark it as earth element. Earth element. Then pushing wind element. Because the wind element push, so pushing, then you mentally note as wind element, then dropping. If you light, then you light is also earth element. Then you mentally note earth element, and then you touch, you feel cold or you feel hot, then it's fire element. Then fire element, fire element. So you discern the four elements during walking meditation, and sometimes you also discern your mind. Who am I observing this activity? Who am I observing this, all the four elements? Then you understand. There's a consciousness, there's a perception, there's a feeling, there's a contact. All this contact, perception, feeling, consciousness, all made up of this I. So actually it's only mental aggregates observing the four elements. So you understand only mind and matter. Mind and matter. Mind and matter. There's no I, no mind, no myself. If your concentration, mindfulness and wisdom become sharp, then you walk in this way, lifting, pushing, dropping, lifting, pushing, dropping. Finally you will see only wind moving. There's no I. Only the movement of the wind. This very good achievement, the understanding non-self.